This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. On this episode, and we've got a really good show lined up for you, Kevin Ioli, the senior boxing writer over at Yahoo Sports. Kevin is also the MMA writer over at Yahoo, so he has a unique perspective on boxing's issues, especially when contrasted with some of the things MMA, specifically the UFC, are trying to do. So I talked to Kevin about UFC's plans to get back into big events as early as mid-April and what that could mean for the future of boxing. Will boxing try to follow the UFC's lead? Plus, Conor McGregor, his plans for a future in boxing, and Ryan Garcia, just how big a star can Ryan Garcia be? So stick around for that. It's a really good conversation. A little bit later on, Terrence Crawford, the welterweight champion, he joins me on the line. And Terrence, he's another guy that's just kind of waiting to see what happens. But Terrence is also waiting to see what happens with Errol Spence. Terrence has been talking to Errol Spence. We dive into that conversation between the two of them in my discussion with Terrence Crawford. So stick around. Great show. A lot of good guests, a lot of good topics, a lot to get into this week. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcast, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Kevin Ioli.
All right, Kevin Ioli is here, Yahoo Sports, boxing, MMA writer, quarantined in a city that, Kevin, I bet Las Vegas, this is probably as quiet as you've ever seen Las Vegas in all your years of living there, isn't it?
I have lived here for over 30 years, Chris, and I could drive on the strip at 3 in the morning and it would be a lot more people than are here now in the middle of the day. It is a ghost town. The New York Times had a map the other day of people who are driving around, and Las Vegas was one of the best in the country. People are not driving. So I give my fellow Las Vegas residents credit. We are quarantining. We are following all orders.
You know, Kevin, I don't want to make this podcast all about when will boxing come back, but living in Las Vegas, I mean, you certainly talk to people out there that are part of the whole process. I mean, what sense do you get from, you know, Vegas officials, Bob Bennett at the Nevada State Athletic Commission, casino owners about when business could resume in Las Vegas?
You know, they are going to want to go hard once they get back, but getting back is going to be the key, Chris. And my guess is we're not going to be looking in Nevada until at the absolute earliest August 1st, and I think probably maybe more likely September 1st. I think they're going to want to be as cautious as possible with this. So I don't think we're going to see fights coming in the summer. I really don't. I think it's going to be a fall type situation.
Wow. I mean, how devastating would that be for Vegas? I mean, that's a city that, you know, effectively the entire source of revenue is tourism and people coming through casinos. Yeah. And I mean, how bad is it going to get?
I mean, Chris, it's terrible. I mean, I remember in the crash of 08 how bad it was, and it was really bad. A lot of people lost their jobs. Home values went down. The value of my own home went down so far that it's never actually recovered totally. It went way back up, but it never recovered where it was at the peak in, say, 07. So, you know, this is going to be devastating to Las Vegas. But Governor Sisolak, who I think has done a great job, he made a point the other day. He said, you know, if I worry about the economy, I won't have any people to make an economy. So I have to save lives first. That's most important. And he said the casino people understand that. So they're going to do everything possible so that when people decide to come back to Las Vegas, and if they have any money to come to Las Vegas, they know that they can do it safely.
Yeah, I think that's part of it too, as you mentioned. I mean, there'll be a safe time to come back to Las Vegas, and there'll be a time that people can come back with discretionary income that they can spend in Las Vegas. All right, so there's a few things I want to get to with you, Kevin. One is going to touch on your other job, covering UFC and mixed martial arts, because look, as we look at when combat sports come back, you have to look at what UFC is trying to do, and that's Dana White, who says he is, I don't know if he said he bought an island or is renting an island, whatever the hell he's doing with a private island. And the intention is to hold major UFC events, week-to-week events, on that island. What do you know about Dana White's plans? And I guess, what do you think of it as far as how effective it could be in bringing MMA back first?
Well, let's clarify, first of all, Chris. So the island is going to be for international fights because he's going to have trouble getting fighters from outside the U.S. in the country. So he got this island that were fighters who were internationally based who can't get into the U.S. will fight on those cards. So those are going to be separate from UFC 249, which is going to happen somewhere in the United States. Now, a lot of us have heard where it's going to be. It hasn't been officially confirmed yet, so I won't say. I don't want to speculate until I know for sure, but there is going to be a place in the United States where UFC 249 is going to be held as of right now as we record this on April 18th. So the fighters are on board. They sign contracts. They have a full 12-fight card. That fight, and then he's going to set up camp at that particular venue and do 4 weeks in a row of shows from there. So if they start and there's nothing happens between now and April 18th, they will have UFC 249 on that date, and then they will go from there 4 consecutive weeks in a row. The island will probably not come into play till May, maybe even June.
So what's your understanding of how Dana is dealing with the safety issues in all this? Most notably, there at current present, there is a lack of testing out there. And I would think that's the biggest issue. Having covered the NBA, right, Kevin, I know they're not coming back until there is widespread testing to the point where it's like available by walking into a CVS or ordering off Amazon. How is Dana White dealing with that?
He's not giving much information, and that's one of the things that unsettles some people who are not really thrilled about him doing this. You know, he said yesterday that everybody will be tested. Don't worry. We take safety seriously, and we did long before the coronavirus, but he's not addressing specifically what's going on. He did say that everybody who is going to be in there is going to get tested. So let's just assume who that is going to be. They have some kind of venue where the fighters are all going to be staying, and the staff is going to stay, and the production people and all that type of stuff. So there's going to have to be some kind of restaurant open. You have to think there's going to have to be some kind of housekeeping people there that are going to be in there. So that work for this place, wherever it is, that are going to have to be there. So you're going to have to test all those people. You're going to have to test all the UFC staff. You're going to have to test athletic commission people who, you know, I'm assuming it's going to be a tribal commission that's going to regulate this. Any referees that want to come in, the judges, the doctors, all these people, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to have to be tested. Dana said there will be media invited. It's not going to be open media, but there will be some media invited to the event. So we have to assume, since they're partners with ESPN, that ESPN media will be there. And then beyond ESPN, we don't know who it's going to be. So there's going to be an enormous amount of people that are going to be tested. What I heard, they're going to put people in a lot of tents, and that there's going to be people not necessarily side by side. So, you know, maybe they'll have the cut men in one tent and they'll have the doctors in another tent, and, you know, and have it set up so that their people are segregated from each other that way.
You're, Kevin, one of the most prominent MMA writers out there. If you're invited, will you go?
Yes, I will go. I mean, I just think that it is, you know, I, from a personal health standpoint, I don't want to go because I feel like, you know, it's going to, I'm 60 years old, it's going to put my health at risk. But I feel the news story would be such that if I am invited and they agree to let me go, I will go.
So, you know, how do you think that impacts what could happen with boxing in the next couple of months? Because if UFC can effectively pull off a show and it goes off without a hitch, boxing can do the same. I mean, they're not similar sports and how they're performed, but they're similar sports in the number of people that can be present for each one.
The amount of money that UFC is spending to pull this off, Chris, is going to be enormous, right? I mean, obviously, you know, we don't know exactly where the show is going to be. Forget the island for the time being. Let's focus on the US-based cards. Obviously, he's got to get a hotel somewhere, that a shutdown hotel that is going to put, where he's going to have beds for all these people to sleep in and all that. So he is renting out an entire hotel. He is flying people on private jets from where they live into this place. There's no boxing, and the margins in boxing are so much smaller. There's no boxing promoter that can afford to do that. So that is never going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Dana certainly has more money at his disposal than even a Bob Arum or, you know, an Oscar De La Hoya when it comes to putting on these events. What is interesting, though, and you said this, on a tribal reservation, Indian reservation, I think, Kevin, those are going to be the first sites that boxing look to when it ultimately can come back. I think if you look at Mohegan Sun or Foxwoods or any of the smaller right. casinos that we see so many show boxes at, they're going to have a little bit more flexibility to do some things because they're not necessarily beholden to what, say, the Connecticut State Athletic Commission does in the case of Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun. They generally right. abide by what that commission says, but they're not, I don't believe they're restricted to it. So I think those are the spots to watch as this pandemic starts to recede a little bit, how quickly they open up. Because to your point, they're probably going to open up a lot quicker than we yes. see Las Vegas open up.
Yeah, I would think, you know, where I think we're going to see a lot of fights, say, in Oklahoma. There's a lot of casinos in Oklahoma, and so you have the tribal land there. And I think you'll see those kind of things happen. As I understand it, and this is unconfirmed, but that the UFC looked to go to Oklahoma and nobody was interested at this point. You know, there's just too many variables. Again, not confirmed, but I believe that to be the case. But I agree with you, Chris. I think there's going to be a lot of those kind of venues that are going to get the shows first because, you know, even though everybody's going to want to go into Las Vegas and have the first show in Las Vegas, we don't know when Las Vegas is going to open up. And I think that the Nevada Athletic Commission is going to be very cautious and very strict when they do. And there'll be a little more leniency in the tribal land. So I think that's what will happen.
All right. So on a lighter topic, but still connected to UFC, Conor McGregor is once again making noise about being a boxer. Once again, he is arguably the most popular combat sports athlete in the world. His notoriety.
I don't even think it's arguably.
No question he is.
Yeah.
I guess you throw the Canelo AJs in there, but no, McGregor is certainly at the top of that list. You know, how serious should we take this? Not how serious should we take Conor McGregor, the boxer, but how serious should we take Conor McGregor's desire to be a boxer?
I think he does want to box. There's no question about it. But he also wants to get back to where he had been in MMA, which is at the top. And not just one of the better fighters in the world, but the best fighter in the world. And so I look at this and I think it's not set up for him to box because if this pandemic had not occurred, he was going to be fighting the winner of Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov in the fall. That would have been his next fight. He would have fought the winner. So now it's going to be – that's going to push him back a little bit. There was talk that he might have fought Justin Gaethje, who now is going to be the one fighting Tony Ferguson in July, and then he would have been able to slide into that title fight later in the year. So he still was focused on fighting in the UFC. So I think you'll see him take a fight probably at 170 pounds in the UFC once they get back up and going. Conor has been very outspoken. You should know this. He called for Ireland to do a lockdown. He put out a video. He spoke to the political leaders in Ireland and begged them to shut down the country and he begged his fellow Irish citizens to stay indoors to try to battle the coronavirus. So, you know, I don't think because of his stance, he is going to be fighting anytime soon. But when he does come back, you know, he's going to be looking to pursue that lightweight title. Given the fact that there's going to be two fights, the one going on April 18th, and then Khabib will fight the winner of that. I think Conor's not going to be looking at a title fight till next year. So if he comes back this year, I believe he will come back in a welterweight UFC fight. So I think boxing is going to be on the back burner for him for quite a while.
Do you think that McGregor actually believes he can be a high-level boxer or he believes he can make a ton of money as you know the foil to a high-level boxer?
100%, I know he believes he can make a lot of money. He says he believes he can be a high-level boxer. I think Conor is a smart guy, and he understands that these guys have been doing this all their lives, and that the thing is, this isn't to make fun of an MMA fighter. They train different things, and the stance in MMA is different. Strikes are thrown different ways, and he has to work on a whole range of tactics. Whereas in boxing, you just work on your hands and your footwork. And so it's totally foreign to him. It's almost like, it's not quite starting over, but it's like as if you were a star softball player, and now you're going to say, I'm going to go in to play in Major League Baseball. Even though the softball's coming at you from 45 feet fast, you know, it's a difference to have Gerrit Cole throwing a cutter at you. I mean, so it's a big, big difference. I don't think that, he is believing that he's the best boxer in the world, but he is a guy that will try anything, and he knows it will make a lot of money, and he's proven he knows how to make money. He's making money on his clothing line. He's making a lot of money on his whiskey that he's selling. He clearly makes, you know, he's a million, guaranteed million draw in MMA when whoever he fights, and if he has the right opponent like Khabib, he did 2.5 million sales for that fight with Khabib at UFC 228. So this is a guy that knows how to make money. He knows how to sell fights. And so, you know, I know he knows if he boxes that it'll be big business and that, you know, he'll get a massive payday.
The whiskey's not bad. I've tried it. Not too bad.
Good. I've heard mixed reviews about it. I read some review that savaged it. I don't drink, so I haven't had it. But, I've heard mixed reviews.
I do drink regularly, and it is not quite Johnny Walker Blue.
Every now and then.
I never drink and write. I drink and edit, maybe. Never drink and write. would dissuade Conor McGregor from getting into boxing ever again? That would be getting in the ring with Canelo. Like, there was that video that was out there where he punched a bag and shouted Canelo's name. I can't think of a worse idea for Conor McGregor, Kevin. No. Canelo Alvarez as a boxer would do some permanent damage to Conor McGregor. That speed, yes, and that power, that wouldn't be pretty.
You know, I wrote in my preview of the McGregor Mayweather fight, I said, you know, Floyd's going to sit there and let him go 3 or 4 rounds before he starts to throw punches, and he's going to play with him. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, you know, you saw that. People have asked me about Manny Pacquiao fighting him. That's not how Manny fights. Manny would have gone after him, and Manny would have tried to knock him out. And Canelo, even at a different level. I mean, Canelo's bigger. You know, Manny would have had a huge, experience edge. But, you know, Conor's fast too. You know, but when you talk Canelo, you're talking about a big guy who is mean and who has extraordinary boxing skills. You know, arguably, I have him as the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world. You know, I know some people have Crawford, some people have Lomachenko, but Canelo is no worse than number three. And to go in with a guy in his prime who would love nothing better than just, you know, not only to beat you, but have you knocked unconscious for 10 and beyond, I think it would be a mistake.
Yeah, I think it'd be a mistake too, but I mean, it would make a ton of money. It would be a huge event, and that might be his last fight at in boxing if he decides to take on a Canelo Alvarez.
It might be his last fight, period, if he does that.
Yeah, that's just not a – it's not pretty. It's not pretty. As we kind of look ahead a little bit, Kevin, I mean, eventually boxing is going to come back, and then you're going to have a lot of fighters that are going to be looking to make some real money in that span. I mean, do you think that one – I don't want to call it a benefit of this, but one consequence – from this, maybe we see bigger fights happen quicker because the real money for guys fighting once a year is going to be in a mega fight as opposed to one of those A-side, C-side events. Do you think that will have an impact?
I do. And I think, you know, the fact that Top Rank and PBC work together so well would say to me that, hey, there's a better chance of Spence and Crawford fighting each other, as an example, one fight right there. The fight that you're trying to make, you're trying to be the matchmaker on, I think you need to get licensed, Charlo and Andrade. I think that's another fight. You saw Demetrius kidded around on April Fool's. I think he had me fooled there for a second. You know, when I saw big news coming, I thought, oh boy, what is it? But yeah, I agree with you. I think that is something that probably will happen because guys, hey, they missed the paydays. So if you're like Spence and Crawford and you fight each other, it's almost like fighting twice on one night because you get that such a bigger payday. I think that is bound to happen. So that's going to be a good thing from it.
Yeah. And let the listeners understand it was Kevin that brought up Charlo Andrade. I didn't do it. I didn't do it this time. It was, I still want it badly. I'm having t-shirts made and we're ready to go. I'm going to start a petition and all that good stuff. Maybe start a GoFundMe, Kevin, for extra funds to make that fight happen. But
I got to get the $50 so you can get your matchmaker's license so you can make this fight legally.
I don't think I could even call that fight. I'd be too giddy about it. I'd be sitting there ringside being like, this is awesome. This is like Pacquiao Mayweather for me. I love this fight.
Radio Raheem is ready to step in anytime. Don't worry.
He's ready. He's on standby right behind me, ready to roll. I mean, I guess to follow up to that question is like, what? I mean, we goof around about Charlo Andrade, but do you think that Crawford and Spence is realistic this year because of all that? Has this pandemic kind of made that fight perhaps more likely than not at this point?
I do. I think it is likely to happen. You saw the fighters, they were talking to each other online just recently. That's not new. They've been doing that for a while. But I think their conversation was a little bit different. I think the PBC and Top Rank, whatever distrust was there, they realize they can work together now. They put together a great promotion on Wilder and Fury. I was frankly disappointed in the number of pay-per-view buys that it did. A boxing, you know, just kind of really in favor of boxing, telling people how well it's doing and how well it was going to do. And that kind of pierced my bubble a little bit. Now, you know, the fact that it did 750, 800, I thought it was going to do significantly more than that. And that was one of the best promoted fights. And what ESPN and Fox did was remarkable. And the fact that you couldn't get over a million with those two guys after their first fight with all the promotion that went on, that was troubling to me. I have to admit that. But I still think that that was a leftover from bygone days. You know, boxing promoters have kicked people in the teeth for so long and not given them the fights that they wanted, and they've teased them and all these issues that have come up, that it's going to take more than just one fight and one great promotion to get it back to where it should be. I still believe in the product, and I still believe that people will watch if you give them a reason to, but the reason is you have to consistently put on these fights. And maybe the silver lining in this COVID-19 and this pandemic we're in is that it'll teach boxing promoters that they have to do this and that they can't wait.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, if you're surprised that Fury and Wilder did as poorly as it did, the easiest way to explain it is the fact that besides fighting each other, they really haven't had any high-profile fights. I mean, Fury against Klitschko was a big fight, but it took place overseas, so there really wasn't a U.S. promotional vehicle behind it. The first fight was great, but it was seen by 300,000-ish people on Showtime pay-per-view. Right. I mean, I say this all the time, Kevin, and I'm sure you agree. Like, the reason Manny Pacquiao is Manny Pacquiao is not because he's a knockout artist. It's because he knocked out, guys like Miguel Cotto, and he fought Antonio Margarito and had four great fights against Juan Manuel Marquez.
Morales, I mean, and Pereira.
Go down the list. I mean, you are who you fight, right? And if you spend your entire career fighting nobodies, and then all of a sudden you fight that one big fight, don't be shocked when the numbers are extremely low, because nobody's heard of you. Nobody's watched these fights outside of the boxing bubble, because they're not interesting fights. You've got to build up to stuff like that.
That's the thing that I think a lot of our colleagues, Chris, don't understand, you know, that they're in this boxing bubble and guys are big to them because we understand, we follow the low level fights, let alone the bigger fights. And so we know how big they are relative to the sport itself, but you're outside it, and people who would be fans and had been fans maybe in a past life, if they're as old as I am, you know, they were fans at one point, but they got turned off by all the BS that go on. You know, they don't know who Wilder is now, or they don't know who Fury is now, and so they've lost that. And you know, I hear people say, I get it on radio interviews. I do how many sports talk radio interviews a week, and they all ask me, hey, you know, what's going on with Floyd Mayweather, because they don't know anybody else in boxing, right? That is one of the issues that, you know, that has to be overcome. And the way that's overcome is doing what Fury and Wilder did. They both promoted that fight great. The promotion ESPN and Fox did was tremendous. And then you have to consistently fight the best fights. And over time, if you do that and you break down the barrier, let's call it out too. That was a horrific undercard. It was an abomination. And you're at, what was it, $75 you were asking people to pay on that night? You gave them nothing to watch but one fight. And that was a mistake. And I think, you know, while it's expensive to put on a good undercard, I think it's a cost of doing business. And, you know, this is, you know, they're going to have to save in other ways. But I think that everybody's going to have to cooperate in this. And I think, you know, some of the fighters are going to have to realize that the days of getting 100% of the license fee have to be over, because if you want the business to grow, everybody has got to chip in.
Yeah, you know, the other part of all this with fights coming back and boxing coming back is that, you know, the urgency to take on big fights is in part going to be because the dates for regular fights might not be there. Like, I don't know if, you know, if college football, NFL, NBA, the Masters, the French Open, Wimbledon, I mean, all these sports events that have been shelved, they're going to need a platform. Exactly. I mean, just go down the list. They're going to need a platform to put these shows on, and that could come at the expense of boxing dates. I mean, Fox might not get a Saturday date they were planning for boxing because it was going to something else. Same thing with ESPN. So if you're trying to get a fight, you might have to make it a mega fight to force yourself to be put on that schedule. And Kevin, once you're on that schedule, one thing I think boxing, especially in the pay-per-view business, you can't charge $75. People, there are tens of millions of people now that are either without a job or have had their pay cut significantly, right, or have been furloughed from their jobs. You cannot be a grade A dickhead and pound and charge somebody $80 for a mid-level pay-per-view and expect to get any kind of audience. If you do, you are incredibly short-sighted and trying to squeeze more water out of the stone than even boxing's ever tried to do before.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think that they have to go out. I think of this kind of like when the NHL had the lockout and they missed the Stanley Cup playoffs that one year and they went out. And what happened when they came back? You know, they changed the rules to be offensive. They required the players to be more, you know, media friendly. So at the time, they were interviewing guys during the game on the bench and all those type of things happened. That's what boxing is going to have to do. And I think one of the things that I referenced when I talked about the license fee, hey, I understand the dilemma a promoter is in. You know, how does a promoter make their money? So back in the days when it was Showtime and HBO, they would get a license fee, say, $4 million to put on a fight or $3 million to put on a fight. And the A side of that promotion would take almost all of that money. So then they would get, the revenue would be ticket sales and sponsorship. And it was difficult, to make it all work out. And only the really big pay-per-view fights were the ones that, they could make money on. I think now, the fighters are going to have to tamp down their financial expectations and say, they'll take a little bit less and that you can live on $1 million purse, it's not bad money. And have to tamp those financial expectations down. And then the promoters have to sit there and say, we have to make sure we get a very good product. And this is where, you don't put appearance fights on and you don't put guys and say, I want to showcase this young star, challenge that young star and have those kind of fights where, top to bottom, people are going to go, oh my God. Because I said this back, and I remember Sports Illustrated when you wrote a cover story, you called Mayweather de la Hoya, the fight to save boxing. And I had written both before and after that came out, I had recommended to Richard Schaefer, who was promoting that show at the time, I said, put Rafael Marquez and Israel Vasquez on that undercard. I said, because people are going to see that fight and go, holy shit. And this is what I've missed in boxing. And you knew that was going to be hit, but they put it on HBO because they got the license fee for that. And then, we know what happened from there. I think if you put that on and fights that the matchmakers know, my God, this is going to be good, put it on an undercard, like let's say Inoue and Casemiro, right? That was going to be its own fight. If you put that on, say, a Crawford and Spence undercard, you're taking away a main event slot, but somebody watches that for the first time and they go, holy shit, look at these guys. And you do that and you rebuild the business from the ground up. And I think then you can attract more sponsorship dollars, you attract more viewers, you create a bigger audience for boxing. I know a lot of MMA fans would be interested in boxing, but what did they say when Fury Wilder came up? Lousy undercard, way too high price. But if you cut the price and you increase the quality, you might dig into some of them too. And if you make the pool of fans bigger, it's only good for everybody.
Completely agree. And I think that, beyond the linear outfits and, pay-per-view, I think that's something DAZN is going to have to do as well. Only because, they're not beholden to dates in the way that networks are with other programming. Right. But there's only so many weeks left in the year. And you got a lot of fighters out there that want fights. So I think you have to get away from, these C-level cards that are featured, let's use Virgil Ortiz for an example. Great fighter. Virgil Ortiz, love him, huge prospect. But I don't think I need to see Virgil Ortiz, Samuel Vargas headlining anything. I think that could be combined with another show and make that show even better. You could have a fight where you have, let's use Canelo. Let's say whenever Canelo comes back, even if it's against Golovkin, put a couple of top prospects, put Ryan Garcia there, put Virgil Ortiz there, and like expose these guys to an audience that is maybe never seen them before. I think it's an opportunity, right, for them to get more eyeballs attracted to them.
I think if you go back and, one of the exercises I like to do is I like to go back to BoxRec and I click on a big fight, let's say an Ali fight, right? And you click on it and you look at what the undercard of that fight was and you see some of the people that fought on those undercards back in the day. In the 80s, it was unbelievable a lot of times. Let's go back to that and let's get to that point where the cards are deep and that we're not putting on these shows where, you know, everybody show. It's an embarrassment. I live in what's considered the fight capital of the world. And half an hour before Fury Wilder, the arena was empty. And then the last couple of minutes, everybody starts streaming in and it fills up right before the fight. But that should be that way earlier, but you're not giving them a reason to come in. You know, so they're out in the casino, they're eating dinner, they're gambling and everything, and they come in at the last minute. And I think you have to give them a reason. So I think boxing, it's not the product, it's the way the product is presented and offered to the public. And, you know, I think they have to reimagine what they're doing. And if they do, you know, it's going to work. But you're exactly right. Dates are precious, even for somebody like DAZN. Immediate coverage is precious. That free media is going to help you, and it's going to be stretched thin because, you know, in my case, I'm going to have UFC, I'm going to have all the boxing promoters out there, I'm going to have Bellator, you know, hitting on me, hey, we have this event coming up. That's great for me, and I'm happy for it, but I'm only one person, and just like, you know, you are and everybody else that's in this, and so we, you know, you're going to really have to give the media a reason to want to dig into your event and cover your event, and it's going to be critical to help in this time where there's a cacophony going on. You know, you want to sound above that, and so I think you're 100% right. Give the media a reason to want to write about you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, free media is going to be hard to come by in the fall. There's just going to be too much going on. I mean, even for sports like the NBA, free media is going to be hard to come by. If you're going up against these huge golf tournaments and tennis tournaments in the months of September, October, November, it's going to be the Wild West out there when it comes to sports at that point. Let me ask you, Kevin, last thing. You know, Sergio and I talk a lot about Ryan Garcia because we've had a bird's eye view of Ryan over the last couple of fights. Really looks spectacular. Ryan's out there now talking a lot of game, you know, going after Gervonta Davis, you know, calling out most of the big names of the lightweight division. How do you perceive Ryan Garcia from a talent perspective? And what do you make of the, you know, all the nonsense he's talking right now towards Gervonta Davis? Is it just rhetoric or is he maybe biting off a little more than he could chew?
You know, I think if Gervonta Davis, Chris, were fighting on a regular basis, it would be a death sentence for Ryan Garcia at this point of his career. I think Ryan Garcia's got a lot of talent, but he's a guy that I don't think was matched the way I would have liked to have seen him match on the way up. The genius of Bruce Trampler always was, you know, he didn't put you in fights that necessarily you were going to lose, but he would make you struggle a little bit, and he would make you see different styles. So, you know, I think of Floyd Mayweather on the way up, and Bruce knew at one point he was going to fight Diego Corrales, so would have fight Tony Pep, who was a tall, thin guy who had a similar style to Corrales. And Floyd saw left-handers, and he saw guys that would give him different looks. And Ryan Garcia didn't have that. You know, Golden Boy tried to make Ryan Garcia into a star before he had really emerged. And Ryan is a genius himself at promoting. And he's done a wonderful job on his Instagram page. He's a good-looking kid. He's well-spoken. And so I understood the need to try to bring him into a star, but he wasn't matched appropriately. So he's fighting guys that you and I would have had a chance to beat, right? And as, you know, not saying I would have won him, but we would have had a chance. You a better chance than me, of course. But I saw you against Marquez and you looked great. But you know,
12 years ago.
All those things, you know, said, I think Ryan has talent. And I think Eddie Reynoso has proven his ability as a trainer by the way he held down. I think Gervonta Davis is too much for him now, but going back to what I said a couple of minutes ago, you know, you might have to jump in the deep end because there's not going to be a lot of options for you available. If you want to be at that top level, those are the kind of fights you're going to have to take.
Yeah, I think the Linares fight will be a good barometer for where Ryan Garcia is. Linares is still a very good fighter.
He
loses, as we know, when Linares loses, he gets knocked out. So he's susceptible to the big shot. And Ryan's got that in his arsenal. I think if he gets through, that's why I think the timing could work out. I mean, presumably we'll see Gervonta Davis against Leo Santa Cruz whenever we come back. I think Gervonta wins that one easily. I don't think Santa Cruz, even at 130, Santa Cruz, I don't think would cause him many problems. I agree. If both those guys get through those fights, I'd love to see that earlier. And look, I think there's some momentum there. I think Ryan's reached a stage of popularity where Gervonta probably looks at him and says, look, I think I can beat him, and it's probably going to make me a lot of money to do it. It's not the same, like, it's not a Tevin Farmer type of situation or something else. I think that's a fight that's makeable when you consider the politics of it all.
I agree with you. No, I think it is makeable, and I think it probably will get made at some point. And I think, you know, the Linares fight is a good fight if that fight doesn't, you know, go off the schedule. Linares reminds me of Ken Norton back in the day. So Ken Norton is in the Hall of Fame, but who is Ken Norton's greatest victory over, right? I mean, we think of Ken Norton, you know, other than the win over Ali, we think of him for his losses, you know, the great fight with Larry Holmes that he lost, and the other two fights with Ali that he lost. He was that kind of guy. He would lose to the absolute best, but only the absolute best beat him. So George Foreman would beat him and Ali would beat him, but then the rest of the guys he would beat. So he was kind of like, and I think that's where Linares stands today in this lightweight division. You got some young talent like Devin Haney and Teofimo Lopez, and you have an established guy like Lomachenko, and there's a lot of good fighters out there. And so Linares is about, you know, hey, he knocked down Lomachenko to be a good fighter to knock him down, right? He gave Lomachenko a good fight. That tells you something about him. And I think he's just one of the guys, Chris, that is a perfect fighter for what I'm talking about for Ryan Garcia. I think that's a really good fight for him to take.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of that Ali, how about that bullshit from the World Boxing Super Series? Mike Tyson beats Ali in a simulated game. No way. If that ever happened, Tyson would win that fight.
Tyson himself would tell you that. I mean, again, I said this, and so people, I said it one time before, and people freaked out because they didn't understand what I mean. Why is Tyson a Hall of Famer? It's not because of who he beat. Did he beat Lennox Lewis? No. Did he beat Holyfield? No. He lost most of his best fights. Tyson obviously was the iconic figure in boxing. He was the youngest champion ever. He was the biggest draw. That's why he's in the Hall of Fame. You know, and Mike was an extraordinarily talented guy, but Mike didn't have that string of wins like a Holyfield had, or, you know, some other guy. And total BS, total absolute BS. Tyson no way would have beaten Winky Wright. Who did Winky Wright knock out in that thing? He had a win that I kind of did. Was it wasn't Sugar Ray. Maybe it was Sugar Ray. Yeah, he knocked out Sugar Ray Leonard.
Dumb game.
Come on.
Dumb game. Don't even do that stuff. Kevin, always appreciate it, man. Stay healthy out there in Vegas, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon as this slow news cycle continues here in boxing.
I love the new look, by the way, Chris. Thanks.
Yeah, doing what I can here at the Short Hair Society.
Everybody is imitating me these days.
Absolutely. Kevin, appreciate it, man.
Thank you, brother.
All right, Terrence Crawford is here, the welterweight champion of the world. He is, I assume, just relaxing in Omaha right now as you deal with this quarantine life. What's quarantine life like for you, Terrence?
Man, it really ain't no different than any other day. You know, I really too much don't do too much of nothing. But at the same time, I ain't locked up in the house either. Mm-hmm. So I'm good.
How's your family deal with kind of, you got young kids too. I mean, how do they deal with kind of having to be stuck at home and not able to go out as much?
They get to go out. I ain't mm-hmm. locking my kids up in the house. I'm trying to tell you, like we not, I'm sorry, but I'm not tripping or worried about this stuff like everybody else. So it's different.
Now, why do you say that? What's your feelings on all this now?
I don't feel like all these people that they saying dying and sick from it is actually true. You know, I think they using fear to try to control us right now for something else. I don't know what it is, but, you know, me personally, I just can't agree with a whole bunch of things that they saying right now.
What part of it? Because, I mean, you see the stuff on TV. I mean, New York seems like it's pretty bad. You're a guy that's in New York a lot.
You got to think the media runs the world. Mm. So you put anything on the media, then everybody going to run with it. Then is it just going to travel so quick? And then now you got a whole bunch of people scared, you know. But my thing is this. If it was so bad, like they say it was, then why they got people out there working on the streets and stuff? Why they got people picking up all the trash? You know, why they got all these people still working, but you only can have takeout? You know, like, it's a whole bunch of questions that I need to ask, that I need answers for. You know, what about police officers that's always higher. You know, me as an officer, if it feels that bad, I'd be like, hey, I'm sorry, but I got to be home with my family. You know, like, hey. So I just don't agree with it, a whole bunch of stuff that they're saying.
Well, you see, police officers in New York, I mean, they're catching it. I mean, there's like, I think, 1,000 maybe police officers in New York City that have caught this virus.
Yeah. But they said that it really don't affect the healthy individuals, just the elderly ones with problems like asthma or, you know, breathing disorders and stuff like that. So, but that's like any cold or flu. You know, you got to protect the ones that have body issues like overweight, obesity, you know, things like that.
It definitely affects the elderly and the people with underlying conditions there. Do you know anybody that has been affected by this?
No. One of our friends, she actually said that she had it, but she's doing better now. So that was the only person.
That's good to hear. You know, as you kind of look towards your boxing career, you were scheduled to fight, or at least penciled in to fight sometime in June, July. When you talk to your management team and to Top Rank, what are they telling you now?
I don't talk to them about it. We ain't had one conversation about it. You know, when the world picks back up and gets back to this normalcy, then we gonna do our thing.
So you don't...
chilling right now, and I'm enjoying the time with my family and, you know, just the time at home to lay back and chill.
Are you anxious at all to get back into the mix?
No. I'm not. I'm not anxious. I'm ready. I'm ready. But I'm not anxious because I know everything happens in time. So the right time will come and I'll be ready.
So without the ability to kind of go to a traditional gym or do most of the things you've been able to do, you have your own gym in your house?
No, I have my own boxing gym. So I don't have them problems. I got everything in the gym, you know, treadmill, bikes, Stairmasters, Jacob ladders, you know, all whatever you need, I got it.
So are you able to go, like, do you go still train like every day? I mean, how does your work day go?
Yeah, I train every day. I just left the gym not too long ago, probably like an hour ago.
How close would you say you are to being like kind of in fighting shape? Like if you got a call for 6 weeks from now, would you be able to do it?
6 weeks? Yeah. I'll be able to fight 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying that I'm like in boxing shape because I'm actually not, you know, sparring or doing anything like that, but give it 6 weeks, I most likely be ready, yeah.
You're one of those big stars, Terrence, where when you fight, you draw pretty big crowds that are out there. There's a lot of talk in boxing about how when boxing eventually comes back, it'll first come back with fights behind closed doors with no crowds. How do you feel about that? If that was brought to you, we can do a fight for you, but there would be no crowd there. How would you react to that?
Well, I haven't heard of that yet. But at the same time, if it was to happen, then they have to pay me more. You know, they have to pay me more because fighters of my status and on my level, we get paid for the people that's coming there as well. So, you know, if I can't get paid off of people coming, then I'm going to have to get paid up front.
Well, if they couldn't pay you or if they couldn't pay you more, would you be comfortable sitting out for as long as it takes to get people back in these buildings?
For sure. For sure. You know, you gotta pay me, you know, to go up there and, you know, do what I do because it ain't free. Just like people gotta pay, you know, to do anything else in the world. You know, you gotta pay us fighters because, you know, we taking a big risk and health risk at the same time. You know, you can't play boxing, you know, one false move and you can be 6 feet.
No question. I just, the state of California, for example, said that you know, and they were making the comment about the NFL. They said that there can't be, they basically said there probably won't be fights in stadiums in the NFL until Thanksgiving. So if it's like Thanksgiving, would you wait that long to fight?
I'm going to have to. I'm going to have to, you know, but at the same time, I'm going to be ready. Like I said, whatever it is, I'm going to be ready.
I mean, I guess the only alternative would be to take less money to fight behind closed doors. And you're just saying you're not ready to do that.
Nah, I ain't ready to do all that. I didn't take less money, you know, almost my whole career, you know, just because I knew where I was trying to go and what I was trying to accomplish. So, you know, we passed that part.
Would you be willing to sit out the entire year if it meant they couldn't do fans and stands?
Well, that's, like I said, that's what we got to do. That's what we got to do, you know. I know, you know, us fighters, we don't want to do that, but if that's what it came to, then, you know, like I said, it have to happen, it have to happen.
One of Errol Spence did an interview recently, and one of the things I thought was interesting is that he said that you guys talk, you know, whether it's via text message or communication. I mean, how often do you guys talk to each other?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't say we talk like that, but I hit him up a couple of times, and, you know, we got on the FaceTime and spoke briefly.
What was that conversation like?
Nothing. It was just, you know, us talking about making a fight. That was pretty much it. And I told him I was gonna fuck him up.
I mean, he says kind of the same thing about you. Is that just talk, or is that, I mean, how real is that?
It's real, you know what I mean? Like, I truly feel like when we fight, I'm gonna fuck him up, you know. And he feel the same way, so that's why, you know, it makes for a great fight. You got the two top welterweights in the division telling the media that they're gonna fuck each one up, you know. So let's see who's telling the truth at the end of the day.
The last time you and I spoke, Terrence, one of the things you said was that, look, Top Rank and PBC and Fox and ESPN are working together, so if they can work together for Fury versus Wilder, why can't they work together for us? The Fury Wilder fight did well, but probably it didn't reach that kind of 2 million number that Bob Arum was looking for, and, you know, the big number. Do you think, knowing what the Fury Wilder fight did, do you think that did enough to make it still likely that we can get those two groups together?
Well, you got to think the two biggest fights in the boxing, like in boxing right now, before AJ got the loss, was Deontay Wilder against Anthony Joshua, Terrence Crawford versus Errol Spence. Them was the two biggest fights to be made, you know, and not taking anything away from Wilder and Fury. It's just that, you know, I feel like Spence Crawford was a way bigger fight than Fury Wilder. That's just in my opinion.
And why?
Because he sat in front of me before, you know, before the fight, you know, during the fight, he hit my seat was right behind Catacorder, right behind him, and his fight was in front of me, and I had tapped him. You know what I mean? Turned around, like, see? You know? Like, I just, you know, let him know, like, this is going to be us, you know what I mean? And, you know, he was just like, man, I'm gonna wash you. I was like, yeah, you got to get in the ring to do that first. You know what I mean? So, you know, it was just a little, you know, jokes between us two.
What'd you think of Fury Wilder?
Oh, Fury put on a clinic, you know. And like I said, you know, if Fury knock out Wilder, then it'll be a surprise. Same way Wilder winning the decision, it'll be a surprise. But I told everybody, but the main factor in that fight was Fury took Wilder's punch and got up. So I felt like Fury had the edge in the fight because he's felt Wilder punching power before. he took it, you know, and he got up and won that round in my eyes. Now, we all know Fury can box, you know, he can outbox him and do his thing. He got more skills and whatnot than Wilder, but nobody seen, you know, Fury going in there and putting pressure on Wilder, because nobody has ever done it, being that Wilder punched so hard. So he had an excellent game plan, and he executed it, and you seen the results.
Were you surprised he took the fight to Wilder like that, going right at him? I mean, he guess he said all along, that's how I'm going to fight.
No, I wasn't surprised, because given that he put on that extra weight, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, he's for real. He's preparing his body to take whatever punishment, you know, is going to be up against come fight night. And, you know, and he did what he said he was going to do.
Do you think a third fight between those two guys will go any different?
Man, it's kind of hard to say. Yeah, it's going to go different, but at this point of time right now, Fury is so confident in his ability and his chin, his skills, and I don't see Wilder changing up too much of anything in this short period of time. You know, it takes years to get rid of bad habits. So I don't know how – I don't see it changing anything, because in my eyes, Tyson Fury was winning the first fight.
The fight with you and Spence is, as you said, massive whenever that happens. When you guys kind of talk to each other, do you put dates on it? Do you start saying, like, all right, let's do this on February 2021? I mean, do you throw dates out there?
Nah. No, it's just when it happens, it's happening, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, no, I don't know. Everybody wants that fight to happen.
It's like we can't put no dates on anything. You know, we got to go to the networks and all that. You got to go to your handlers. He's with Al Heyman. I'm with Bob Brown and Top Rank. And, you know, they going to sit at the table, and we going to have to talk sooner or later.
Do you get the sense from talking to him that, like, you know, obviously he wants a comeback fight, but after that, does he want you?
I told him, he said he's going right into a fight with Danny Garcia or Pacquiao, or me, or I told him, like, me personally, like, don't come back trying to fight me, because that ain't the fight that, you know, you really want on your first fight to come back. Like, you know, I wouldn't even take that fight, given if it was offered to me. I wouldn't take it, because it's a lose-lose situation for me. You know, if, you know, something was to happen and I knocked him out or I beat him up bad, and they will say, oh, well, he's not the same Errol Spence. He's coming off a car accident, this and that and that and this. And then that would be that would never end for my whole career. You know, even after my career, everybody would be talking about how I fought Errol Spence after he got the car accident. And I didn't want to fight him before the car accident. That would be the story of the line. So I just want to see him back to the old Errol Spence that he used to be. And then, you know, me and him going to fight.
So you're probably right. I mean, him needed to get back in the ring first and beat somebody, you know, that would take any doubt away from a fight with you, what it would mean. So, yeah, I think that's probably the best way to go. But if he does that, Terrence, what do you do in the interim? And do you have an idea in mind of what you want to do, who you want to fight, what weight you want to fight at?
Well, you know, my manager and my coaches, you know, they threw out a lot of options for me, you know. So we got Kell Brook. We got that fight if we want. We looking at fighting the guy at 154.
Teixeira.
Yeah. So we got a few options that we can go to.
Do any one of those excite you more than the other? Do they? Anyone get your blood flowing more than the other?
Not really. You know, like I said, it's a fight. My blood always going to be boiling. You know, that's just the competitive nature in myself. But yeah, you gotta fight what's in front of you. You know, I never look over any opponent or any fighter. So in my eyes, if that fight or any one of those fights was presented and made, then that would just be the fight that I have in front of me.
Do you always even keeled then? Like, even like your unification fights at 140, I mean, are you always the same way going into fights? Do you ever get, you know, picked up more for other ones?
Yeah, you, of course you're going to get picked up for more. Like my undisputed fight, I was like on like 20, mm-hmm. you know, but my Victor Postol, I was on 20, you mm-hmm. know, but like my Felix Diaz and John Molina, I was just like on like 12, 10, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time, I try to train harder in my present camp than my last camp. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that take away everything.
Last question. Maurice Hooker's your stablemate now. He was supposed to fight in April against Regis Prograis. Have you talked to him? I mean, how's he doing as far as, you know, staying as prepared as he can be?
Well, yeah, we haven't talked since he's been back home. I know he's with his family, and I seen him in the gym. So, you know, maybe I'll give him a call today.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Terrence, I appreciate it, man. Stay healthy out there, and hopefully we get you back in the ring real soon against Errol Spence. We all need that fight, Terrence. We all need that fight.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Thanks.